As part of an industry that's creating a product for consumers, having insights behind those consumers can really help drive decisions, marketing, and of course, your branding efforts. How aware are consumers of your brand in your area? What kind of thoughts come to your customers' mind when they hear your name? What are their political leanings? What kind of beers do they drink based on their lifestyle? Hopefully, you are talking with your customers and trying to extract insights they can use to help drive your business. You can, of course, keep a pulse on what's going on with your customers through Untappd or other review sites like Yelp or Google. These are all very helpful, but imagine pulling large amounts of this kind of data from a variety of craft beer consumers in your area. Rob Cartwright, co-founder of Data Quencher, comes from a background of market research. Rob took his passion for craft beer and decided to start his own business providing market research for the craft beer space. Let's dig into some interesting insights and learn more about the craft beer market on this episode of Branding Brews. Thanks for checking out Branding Brews. My name is Ryan, your host, and also the owner of Craft Brew Creative. With over 15 years of experience in branding and design, I am able to bring my knowledge not only to this show, but to great clients that make great beer. From the essentials like websites, labels, tap handles and sales sheets, to merchandise and vehicle wraps, Craft Brew Creative would love to help develop a cohesive and strong brand for your brewery. Craft Brew Creative thrives on delivering value through a collaborative, fun, and interactive design process. Whether you're an existing brewery or a brewery in planning, Craft Brew Creative will be a valuable partner to your team. If you're in need of any design or marketing services, I would love to get in touch. Head on over to craftbrewcreative.com for more information, or just feel free to email me, ryan@craftbrewcreative.com. All right. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Branding Brews. And I am your host, Ryan Wheaton, graphic designer and branding guy when it comes to the craft beer space. And today I'm excited to be joined by Rob Cartwright, who is the founder of Data Quencher. I followed him on the old beer Twitter, but I was able to run into him recently at the California Craft Beer Summit, which I'll have a episode coming out soon. Just all about the Craft Beer Summit, but it was nice to be able to run into Rob. And how's it going, bud?
Going well. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. I'm sipping on some chai tea and just hanging out and enjoying my morning. So how about yourself?
Doing well. Actually, I'm sipping on a Sam Adams Oktoberfest because it's afternoon here. And so, you know, it felt like you shouldn't do a beer podcast without a beer in hand. At least that was my theory, or my excuse, perhaps.
I feel like I kind of fail on that aspect. I feel like so many people I interview, they're like, "Oh yeah, beer podcast, man. We should be drinking beer." And I don't know if it's become somewhat more responsible in my older age or what, but I feel like I'm kind of lagging on the beer while I'm doing my beer podcast. Yeah. Well, cool, man. Thanks for joining. Why don't you just give the listeners out there kind of a little background about who you are, where you came from, and just a bit about Data Quencher.
Okay, sure. So Data Quencher is a marketing research firm, and we're focused exclusively on the craft beer industry. My whole background has been in market research my whole career, as has my business partner, and some friends of ours who are brewery and planning. They came to us with some kind of really basic research questions, and we said, "Oh yeah, we'll help you with that." And over time, you know, it kind of started as a side project, evolved into a passion project, and then, you know, it's become business. Our backgrounds are in the beverage business, but with the Coca-Cola company for a number of years, and we've kind of taken some of the tools that they're using and made it so that they're stripped down so we can use them to help independent brewers grow and thrive. We survey about 10,000 beer drinkers a year across the country. So we can provide some local and regional insights. You know, the Brewers Association does a great national study with Nielsen, and there's some other really big picture studies, which are great to kind of see how the industry's going. But if you want to get to your local market or your state, there's not a lot there. And so that's kind of the void we're trying to help fill and provide that information. We focus on what we call the three B's. So we ask people, you know, what do they think of the beers, the brands, and the business of craft brewing? So we get that consumer lens on everything.
And so, yeah, you, And so you do kind of get down to the state level and sometimes maybe even a little bit more local than that. Is that right?
Right, right. Each of our studies so far have been at the state level. So, you know, we do one for Oregon, one for Texas. California, because of its size, we've actually split up into four different regions just because it's so big. You can study.
Yeah. And Northern California is vastly different than Southern California.
Yeah. And it's such a beer rich state as well that, there's just so much going on there. You can't really do it all in one study.
Yeah. Cool. So I think this is a part of the reason why I was excited to connect with you is just, coming from the branding side of things, I think, knowing your target audience, your target consumers is really important. I'm just getting ready to post an episode where I was talking about communications with a brewery to their consumer and where sometimes people fall short. I think it's easy for brewers and I guess I would say like kind of just in general, like a lot of times like breweries start up and they don't have business experience or marketing experience. You know, they're I guess rightly so, they're focused on making good beer, which, you know. But then when it comes to the marketing side of things, I think it's easy for them to just like focus on what they think people want to hear or what they, you know, just kind of like focus more on themselves about what they're doing. And so I think being able to know your target market, your target consumer is just going to be really helpful for you in knowing how to better market your beer and better market your brand. Just kind of a big picture. Maybe can you talk a little bit about the importance of your like research or about the data you find for the consumers and like maybe just like a really high level of like what kind of like questions or what kind of insights you get on your surveys?
Sure. And I think you bring up a great point is a lot, you know, very few people entered this business because they wanted to have a cool logo or cool t-shirts. You know, they entered craft brewing because they're craftsmen or craftswomen. If that's even, I'm not sure. Yeah. Craft people. Let's go with that. So, you know, they didn't enter because they wanted to be marketers. If they wanted to do that, they would have, you know, gone to work for Procter & Gamble or something. So, early on, that was a lesson someone taught me is that you have to remember these are basically artists, first and foremost. You know, their craft happens to be making really delicious beer. What we're able to do is kind of provide that view into their customers that maybe they don't have. They see people in the tap room, they talk to their friends, they talk to people at beer festivals. Or maybe they look at their Untappd or their Yelp reviews, you know, but that's kind of their only feedback they're getting. And I think it's really easy, and this isn't just in brewing, it's in any business, is to fall into the trap of thinking your customer is just like you. And they're not, they very rarely are. There's only so many people like you out there. But we all kind of end up in our little bubbles just as life goes on. And it's easy to start thinking, oh yeah, they'll like this cause I liked it. Maybe not, you know, it's, what's the number? I think it's, you know, craft beer is at what, like 12%, you know, or something now. I mean, that means there's an awful lot of people out there who don't like what we're making as an industry, you know? So, right. I think it's easy to kind of fall into that trap when you like it and everyone else around you likes it. We're able to kind of give that look into, well, you know, for example, we were working with a brewer down in Texas and, we did a big profile on their customer base and what kind of styles they were drinking. And this brewery really specializes in, you know, really crisp lagers, pilsners, you know, just really nice traditional styles. And one of the things we found is that their customers were buying a lot of brown beer. It really was kind of an eye opener because they don't really, I mean, they would put out one like every now and then as a seasonal or a one-off just to have it in the tap room. When we looked at it, I said, you know, these guys really are buying a lot of this and they're not buying it from you. So, you know, that kind of thing goes, oh, well, you know, maybe there's an opportunity here to adjust the portfolio. You know, we already have them as customers. Let's capture more of that business by giving them more of what they want.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think one of the interesting, I think everyone, I mean, obviously the big money maker right now is, you know, going down the hazy train. I think that's like a pretty
you know, sure bet if you're going to try to get a beer that's popular. But yeah, also at the Craft Beer Summit, I think it was like one of the opening keynotes. It was from Bart Watson. I think he's the chief economist, I think, for the Brewers Association. So he was showing some of the stats between popular beer styles. And there's kind of a long tail, maybe not that long, but of other styles that are still doing really well. And I think like brown ales were on that list of beers that were doing really well. Obviously, like just like you mentioned, having that kind of insights is just valuable. And you want to be able to please as many people as possible, but there's all these, and there's also, you know, like these different styles that are going to be not as popular, you know, as like some of the IPA stuff going on right now, but that are still going to be popular, and people are still going to want, you know, desire those beers. So I think that's an interesting insight for sure.
And, you know, that just reminded me of something. We did an analysis over the summer when the Brewer Association, came out with their list of, you know, the production numbers for last year, you know, which breweries are producing more beer, which are producing less. We took that data, and what we did is we went and looked at our, you know, database of people and said, okay, customers who are buying beer from breweries that are increasing production, are they different than customers of people that are buying beer from places that are flat or maybe even declining a little bit? Are there differences in the styles? And it turned out there was, and frankly, it really surprised me. We found that people who are buying beer from breweries that are growing, that are, you know, at least as reported by the Brewer Association, are less likely to buy pale ales and IPAs than kind of your regular craft beer drinker. They're moving, and they're kind of going everywhere. They're not necessarily moving into one style. You know, we see a little more lager, a little more, but by no means does that mean they've stopped buying IPAs. It's still huge, but they are less likely. So I don't know if that's a kind of an early sign, a canary in the coal mine, if you would, of you know, the IPA maybe is running its course. It's still huge, but you know, I don't know. It's something we'll keep an eye on. It'll be interesting to see in future waves of the research how that kind of plays out.
Yeah. Yeah, and do you by chance get any data in regards to breweries that do more distribution versus maybe some kind of like smaller breweries that focus to more like on-premise? Because I can imagine if people that go on-premise, you know, once you're there and you're able to like talk to, you know, the people working at the brewery that are pouring your beer, like I think, you know, they can kind of like encourage people to try different styles. So I imagine that might be, consumers might be trying different styles at more like on-premise versus a more heavily distributed brewery where people are buying it off the shelf. I don't know. Do you have any data around that at all?
Not really, but that's a really good point. And then, you know, just to maybe put a layer on that, it's also, you know, I mean, let's face it, there's certain styles that ship a lot better than others.
Right.
You know, a double IPA, I mean, that shelf life is pretty tight. So you miss out on,
right.
You've missed out.
Yep.
You know, whereas, you know, there's obviously other styles that you can sit there for 6 months and are really not any different than if you got it fresh off the thing. So yeah, if you're in the tap room, it's a very different experience than going in and buying it off the shelf at the local Safeway or Kroger or whatever you have, depending on where you live.
Right. Right. Totally. Cool. Well, yeah, so you kind of had some stuff, I've checked out some of the stuff you have on your blog and some interesting information, and I think it would be cool just to kind of dive into some of the stuff you've found. And I think on the first point that you brought up to me was kind of around social topics. One of the numbers you mentioned when we had a call previously was that I found fairly interesting was around the politics and craft beer, and particularly the amount of beer consumers that skew towards the conservative side of things. So you'd talk about that a little bit, because I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. So, and we only recently, just in the past, say 2 months, kind of as the news around the new election or the, you know, fall election has really become front and center. We added a question into our survey, which we run in different waves, just to gauge kind of the political leanings. So, you know, are you very liberal, somewhat liberal, in the middle, somewhat conservative or very conservative. What we found was that there are a lot of people who identify as conservative who are craft beer drinkers. For example, just, you know, in California, we had about 32% of California craft drinkers identify as conservative. Okay, so about 1 in 3. But to put that in perspective, only 27% of California residents overall identify as conservative. So 1 in 3 craft beer drinkers say they're conservative. Only 1 in 4 residents say they are, meaning that craft beer drinker is actually more likely to identify as conservative than the average California resident. And, you know, this is, I think, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, you know, it's just interesting because there's, if we did the same survey with brewers, and I have no data to back this up whatsoever, but I think you would see a number, you know, of brewers identifying as conservative as being very low, you know, maybe 5 or 10%. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and so, and as more and more brewers are becoming more kind of politically active, social active, you know, they're taking stands and being very public about it. You know, I just saw yesterday, founders, quit their Chamber of Commerce, up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, because the Chamber of Commerce endorsed a candidate for governor that they disagreed with. You know, there's all kinds of things. The Chicago Tribune just ran an article about breweries that are, you know, making anti-Trump beers and whatnot. That's interesting. You know, it's kind of this intersection of politics and beer, but, you know, at the same time, you do need to remember that depending on your market, about 1 out of 3 people lean to the right. So the good news on all that is if you're a brewer and you do want to sort of take a stand, the conservative craft beer drinker is much less likely to take your political stance into consideration when they're making a purchase. So they may disagree with you, but they like your beer, they'll still drink your beer. Versus finding, you know, for right. people who are more on the left, if they don't like your stance on something, you're out, you're dead, you don't exist. So,
yeah,
you know, it's the politics is personal and blah, blah, blah. You know, we could probably talk 5 hours on that, but yeah, it's interesting. But just overall, it's like there is a slight conservative skew, and we're seeing it. We saw it in California. We see it in other states as well. So it's sort of this kind of gap or disconnect between industry and their customers when it comes to kind of that outlook on social issues.
Yeah. Right. And I imagine if you lean more conservative, and you're a big craft beer drinker, I'm sure you're probably pretty used to the more liberal leanings of, you know, the whole craft beer industry or for breweries. So I'm sure, like you mentioned, like, you know, if you're a brewery that happens to take some sort of stance that goes against your views, I imagine these more conservative beer drinkers are, you know, probably kind of used to that kind of environment a bit. And as long as it's not anything like too offensive or too crazy, I'm sure, you know, they want to drink good beer just like everybody else. So it's, you know, So I thought that was really interesting. I mean, just generally speaking, I, you know, everyone I'm out, I don't go around asking, you know, other people in the tap room what their political leanings are, but, you know, I find that most of the people I do talk to are more towards the left side of things for sure. And then you also mentioned too, like, the importance of diversity to the consumer. And, I had an episode, not too long ago, talking about being inclusive with your brand, being opening and welcoming to people of color, gender, you know, just trying to be really inclusive and opening up the craft beer market to be welcoming and inviting more people into it. So I'd be interested to hear a little bit about what you found when it comes to, like, the importance of diversity to
consumers. Yeah, so the short answer is it does matter. You know, it's something that's getting a lot of talk, you know, on beer Twitter and, you know, just across the industry right now. I mean, the BA appointed the first ever diversity ambassador earlier this year. You know, there's a lot of talk about it in social media, but, you know, the question as a consumer researcher is I have is, do consumers actually care? And so we put a couple questions into the most recent survey, and yeah, turns out they do. About 2 out of 3 say that it really matters to them. Just as a side note, going back to our politics thing, it was interesting. No difference between people who identify as conservative or identify as liberal. Both groups said about two thirds of them said diversity mattered. So that was a little bit of a surprise. Now this group of consumers matter because they're different than other craft beer drinkers in two kind of key ways. The first is they drink more often. Over half of them are drinking at least twice a week, if not more. And this is the number that really kind of blew me away, is about 80% of them report having visited at least one tap room in the past year. So that, I think, is a big kind of aha to look at your, to really kind of audit or just, study what is your tap room saying? What does that environment say? And there's lots of stuff out there about this. I'm not going to, try and explain how you should design your tap room, but what does that experience think? Yeah. And does that reflect your values? Does it reflect the values of the organization? How inclusive is it? How welcoming is it? Because, there's lots of ways you can screw that up and not even realize it. So, I'd encourage people to really, really take a look at the environment they're creating there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's great for sure. I think that's something important to feel. I mean, I'm seeing more and more women in working at breweries, which is awesome. And I think having that diversity and on your staff, or on your team, having some of that perspective, having women or people of color or just diversity on your staff, when it comes to your consumers, I think it's going to be a good thing. I think it's going to kind of help shed some light on maybe some different areas and stuff like you're mentioning, having, taking a look at your taproom and your environment and just in general like that. I think that's really, really good to be able to approach it that way. excuse me. So you basically said two out of three consumers just across the board find that the diversity is important to them.
Right. Right. And we asked specifically in terms of, cause we didn't just say, is diversity important? Do you like diversity? Yeah, sure. Okay. Here. Now we asked specifically in the craft brewing world, how does this matter? How do you see it? We asked a couple of different questions to kind of get around to that, but yeah, two out of three, it really clearly matters to them.
Cool. And so jumping to another kind of topic, talking about marketplace, and you had mentioned the importance of local to consumers, and I know for different areas I think this is going to be different. I know for instance, I know Portland here in Oregon, I think it has a very high number of craft beer consumers that drink mostly local or drink more local than anything. I'm kind of interested to see what you found in regards to how important local is to consumers in general.
Yeah. And, before I even answer that, I've got to say, I personally hate going into a bar, restaurant, store and seeing a sign up with a brand, whatever brand it is, and just says drink local. Like that full tagline. It's like,
yeah.
Wow. I'm so, so tired of that. I'll drink good and drink good and local if I can. But the research shows that there's actually a very good reason for pounding that message, pounding away that message. We did an analysis of regional brewers, comparing their scores on a whole bunch of different questions in their home state versus neighboring state. So, we looked at Goose Island, which I know is technically not by the BA's definition craft. Okay, whatever. But we looked at how they're viewed in Illinois versus how they're viewed in Michigan and Indiana. We looked at Sierra Nevada to see, within California, how they're viewed versus Oregon. And there were a couple others which suddenly escaped me. But what we found out is that local really does give a bump in the scores. So, when we ask, is this brewer making a high quality product? You see scores that are 15 to 20% higher on the brewer's home state versus the neighboring state. when we say, is this brewer innovative? You see that same 15 to 20% bump. Are they truly independent? You see the same thing. So there's this huge kind of home team effect. You get this halo, if you would, brand halo around being the local brewer, however you want to define local. In some places that means it's in your state. In Portland, it might mean it's in your neighborhood because there's so many choices. That how one defines local is a little bit different. But it's really, I was really surprised kind of on the quality one, to be honest, because it's this exact same product, being served in both states, and yet, somehow it's just so much better when it's from there, from your state.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, like you mentioned that, I think that's a good way to put it, like the home team kind of a home team advantage aspect of that. And also in a recent, episode I had with talking about authenticity, and the kind of the idea of, drinker consumers these days in general, they're all about trying to know where their source of their products are coming from and who makes it, kind of like the kind of an extension of the farmer's market kind of thing, where you can go to somewhere in your neighborhood or, in your local, your local area, and be able to get products that are made right there. So I think that, that definitely makes sense. I think people are wanting to connect with that more so than ever. And I could see, I guess a little bit of a less of appeal of just kind of, beers that are crossing state lines or whatever. And I'd be curious to see too, like, I know there's the new trend now is for breweries to start opening up like tap rooms in other locations. And I'd be curious to see, obviously like Modern Times being one of them, but I know there's a number of breweries that are doing this. I guess Modern Times opened a location here in Portland, and I think they're doing pretty well, generally speaking. I'd be kind of curious to see if that gives them a bump too, a brewery opened a tap room in another state, or even in different location in the same state, if that kind of gave them a bit of a bump in that local area in regards to like seeing them as more, maybe like seeing them as more local or whatever. That'd be kind of interesting to see.
That's a great question, and we haven't really explored it, but I'll have to put that in the next week, because I know you talk about Modern Times, Ballast Points, obviously entrenched in. And yes, I know they're Constellation Brands, whatever. But they just opened up a big tap room in Chicago, which is nowhere near their home market. So
right.
That good question. Yeah, we'll look into that on a future wave.
Nice. Yeah. Cool, man. That's awesome. Yeah. And then you have a topic you call potpourri, which I imagine is just kind of a little mix mash of like. Of all these different things that are interesting. And I did read a blog post on your website talking about consumers that skew towards being more environmentally friendly or maybe consider themselves green and their drinking trends. And I know I'm always a big advocate, because I take the environment as something I try to consider in my daily life, with the products I purchase. I eat mostly all organic, and I'm vegan, and I don't think it's going to hurt any brand to push to try to be more sustainable. I know the BA has some good stuff with that too, being more sustainable and having a lighter footprint. And I think that's a good thing for your brand. I think that can only help when it comes to how consumers see your brand and how they, grow to love your brand. So what kind of information did you have around those kind of consumers, with their, with like their preferences and how they drink beer and stuff?
Yeah. So, first off, let's just kind of take a step back. So when it comes to environment, a lot of brewers talk about it. It's a big thing, right? So you have, like the Sierra Nevada's operation over in North Carolina, which if you haven't been to and you're ever in North Carolina, you've got to go see. It's like a state park devoted to beer. It's fantastic. But it's LEED certified and you know, lots of breweries partner with more environmental organizations like Sweetwater down in Atlanta. And I think there's a natural kind of, I mean, it makes sense, right? Water is kind of the key to making quality beer. So, you know, it makes sense. So there's a lot of talk about that. But of course, we wondered, do consumers care? And they do, mostly. It's around 55% nationally, you know, will really take into account. And again, we ask this question a few different ways. You don't just, you know, say, hey, do you like the environment? Yeah, cool, trees, yay. Now, so, you know, we ask them, you know, how, does this play a role in your decision factor? And or factor in your decision? And yeah, about 55% of the people identify that is, does. When it comes to the politics of these people, I keep going back to that. I don't know why. There is a big skew here. So when you bring environment in, yeah, that matters to about 2/3 of those who identify as liberal and about 40% of those identify as conservative. So clearly it's a bigger factor for people who are perhaps more progressive. And when you get to their preferences, this part is just, this is why I put it in potpourri, because I don't know what to make of it either way. Those who identify as environmentally conscious, let's say, are twice as likely to purchase sour beers than craft beer drinkers who say the environment isn't all that important to them. So if you can figure out what's driving that, I'd love to hear it, because it's an interesting little correlation.
Yeah, I'm curious if that's like, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of curious because a lot of times that comes with like the association of like farmhouse style, you know, like wild fermented. I could see people who are more environmentally conscious that do a lot of like hiking and traveling and being adventurous. I, you know, not to say that others aren't, but I could see that kind of thing, you know, like, and so I wonder if that kind of comes with an association with like wild fermented or kind of beers that use more unique ingredients, you know, like foraged ingredients, or just, I wonder if that has any association from that level at all.
Yeah, that's I never thought about it, but you're right. I mean, even just the name farmhouse as a name, I mean, it puts into your mind, yeah, you picture, you know, a farm, not, you know, an industrial brewery full of giant kettles, you know, I mean, it creates an image immediately, yeah, of that. And then you can say, yeah, it was grown on XYZ farm and we fermented, you know, yeah, the wild fermentation. Yeah, it does tell a different story altogether than kind of other styles of beer. So yeah, maybe that the story is what's driving, yeah, it.
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the things I find, kind of jumping here a little bit to just kind of some general ideas or, you know, reasoning behind doing these kind of like surveys and getting data about your consumer. I know last time we talked, and I find this to be pretty resonating with a lot of the breweries, smaller breweries that I've worked with that are starting up, just to be, you know, ask them like, who are, you know, who is your consumer? Who is your target, you know, craft beer drinker? And we kind of touched on this earlier, but I think generally they're like, everybody. I want everybody to drink my beer. Which, you know, when it comes to the marketing side of things or branding kind of side of things, that just like, it's almost impossible to try to market or brand to everybody. So I think like, kind of curious to hear from your end, you know, maybe like what, like if a brewery, you know, say like a medium sized brewery were to approach you, or even a small sized brewery were to approach you and be like, what kind of insights can you deliver? And like, what should I take away from that? Do you have any kind of like just general, like pitch, you know, or just kind of the general, like overlay of like what they can get out of that and what kind of like actions they might be able to take out from that data?
Yeah, sure. So it's, I mean, there's a couple of things. So there's the brand level, you know, and the simple fact is the brand is going to become more and more important. And it's a word that gets abused a lot, but it's something that you have to have. and you have to own a space. You have to have it stand for something. You know, one of the things, I can't remember if we talked about this in California or not, but, you know, as we were getting this off the ground a while back, we went around and, you know, talked to brewers all over the place. And one of the questions we would ask is, so what makes your brewery different? You know, there's lots of breweries around here, and there's more opening every day. What makes you guys different than all these other people? And I'm telling you, 9 times out of 10, they'd look you straight in the eye and they'd say, quality. Our quality is what makes us different. And I'd be like, okay, cool. Quality isn't going to set you apart, especially if everybody has it. And I think what we're going to see here over the next few years, certainly, is that quality is simply table stakes. It's, you know,
yeah,
it's baseline. It's what you have to have to even stay in this business. If you're not, you know, producing something consistently and it's a certain level of quality, you're not going to be around anyway. You know, but you can't own quality as a brand attribute unless you want to spend a gazillion dollars in advertising, and I don't think most brewers want to do that. So given that, you've got to figure something else out, something that you can own or that you can do better than anyone else, and, you know, really plant your flag there. I see some places really doing it well. I see a lot not doing it. I see a lot that really blend with everybody else. And that's fine when you're growing 15% a year. It's probably okay when you're growing 5% a year, but when growth slows to flat or worse, that's not gonna, you're not gonna be able to thrive in that kind of environment. So, you know, it's, I think, really, really important to figure out what your brand is and how does it fit within the consumer's mind? Because it doesn't matter what you say your brand is. Your brand is whatever the consumer plays back to you. You know, but we're all about this. Well, your consumer says you're about this. We're not about that. Well, yes, you are, because the consumer says so. That's just
it.
So, you know, by understanding sort of that marketplace. So, okay, well, you know, we're in, let's say, Charlotte, North Carolina. Okay, well, who's the innovative brewer? Who's the quality brewer? Who's the, you know, really, really independent brewer? You know, who's doing the crazy stuff, the innovative one? Understanding where those breweries fall kind of helps you scope out, okay, well, here's where I should play. You know, we're the maker of consistently quality, this style of beer, and we, you know, have aligned ourselves with this social value, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, you've got to be clear, and you've got to be in a space that makes you unique to everybody else around you.
Yeah. Right. I mean, like, I think we kind of chuckled a little bit when we talked before about asking the question of, I think you should ask your employees and also ask your consumers, like, you know, what, like, 3 words would you associate with your brewery, with your brand? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I think just as you're talking about, you know, what you were just, you know, just talking about, is I think you'll find it interesting that, like, you, and we talked about, like, you know, how you tend to market for yourself and not necessarily for the consumer. But yeah, I think asking that question, like having people kind of hone down your brand into 3 concise words that describe it. You know, you might think that quality or something would be one of the key attributes to your, you know, to your brand. Which I think is, you know, I mean, everybody should make quality beer, but, you know, or maybe you might consider yourself, like, adventurous or outdoorsy or so, whatever. I don't know. You might have some preconceived notions of what your brand is. But yeah, I mean, your brand is kind of what your consumer makes it to be or what they see out of it. So, yeah, you know, I think if you're able to ask, and I think your employees are really great too, cause they live it, and you might be surprised what they kind of come up with this. But then also, obviously, you know, your consumer. And I think, you know, going through where you can get a larger, more maybe consistent or, like, more diversified data set, if you're to go, you know, with somebody like yourself to do a survey. Because I imagine that with nowadays, you know, with all the tools that are available, like social media and all these online platforms and tools, I think it's pretty easy. Like, I think it would be a big fault if you just, like, didn't use these tools to see what your consumers are thinking, and let them kind of help drive, you know, the decisions you make behind your brand and behind your beer. But yeah, ask them, like, what are three words you think of when you think of XYZ brewery, and just kind of see where that overlap is. You know, you might be surprised, like there might be one resonating word there that you're just like, man, like we were just, it was funny at the California Craft Beer Summit. I was, you know, we're listening to a seminar talk from the marketing, the head marketing guy for Sierra Nevada. And I used to live in Chico, and so I'm really familiar with that brand. But I thought it was really interesting that, like, they, I don't know, he was saying basically, like, it took him like 30 years to land on the branding and marketing of just being outdoors, you know. And it's just like, and he was saying, like, oh my gosh, we're just idiots. Like, our name is Sierra Nevada Mountains, you know, like, you know, like, just remind people of camping and or being on the river or, you know, whatever. And I thought it was kind of interesting. So
yeah, the Sierra Nevada one, I think, is really interesting. And yeah, I really enjoyed that talk at the summit as well. Yeah, they've just, my understanding is that, like, in the last year and a half, 2 years, have hired what, you know, we would call brand managers. And I know from a market research standpoint, they just built that function like in the past year or so. Which is kind of amazing. If your background's in consumer packaged goods, I mean, think about it. You go into your grocery, you know, there's the beer aisle, right? It's got everything, you know, stacked up here and there and everywhere. You know, the one aisle over is, let's say, toothpaste. I'm just making this up. Well, you know, the makers of Crest spend, I'm going to guess, at least $2 million a year on research. So everything on that package has been tested 10 times over. Everything in any messaging they have has been tested and tested and retested. I mean, it's a fine-tuned machine. And then you go one aisle over and it's just like, yeah, hey, you know, my sister-in-law is an artist, so she drew the logo and here it is on the package. And, you know, and I'm not saying Sierra Nevada did that, but it's just amazing that they're in an environment where everything right. else in that store, everything else has been tested and retested and retested. And, you know, they're kind of like, just the quality of their product, you know, 'cause it is a great product, has carried them for so long and so well.
Yeah. Right. And so I think it's like, as I mentioned, man, like, they got all these tools available. Like, I think, try to get outside of your bubble and just see what's resonating, you know, see what, you know, your average consumer thinks about, just seeing where their perspective is and using that to kind of help drive your brand and drive the beers you're making. And yeah, and I think trying to position, doing like kind of a positioning for your brewery, I think is important. And, you know, there's some different practices you can do, but, you know, you can kind of like analyze, the beer market around where you're at and, you know, how many breweries are doing more like wild fermented or sour, how many breweries are doing more session beers, how many breweries do more packaging versus more on premise. And, you can start mapping out these breweries and where they fall on this like X and Y chart. And you can do this for all sorts of different topics, you know, like, you know, is this brewery adventurous or is this brewery more like urban kind of modern, or are they more rustic, you know, and like, you can just do all these different things. And, you know, you can start to, when you overlay these kind of, these maps, you can cut these charts, you really can kind of start to see where there might be some holes in that market. You know, and I think using something like what you're able to deliver, using some of that data of what consumers are drawn to or what they care about, you might be able to kind of position yourself as a brewery that fits either what consumers, you know, are desiring in the area that maybe the breweries aren't delivering on, or just even just for your brand in general, giving yourself a position that's going to be unique that you can stand by and like drive to get that brand going.
Yeah. And building on that, you know, going back to what you said a couple of minutes ago about the three words question, you know, describe your brand in three words. We actually ironically use that in our surveys as well. And it is a good tool to find out, because I mean, one of the things or two kind of observations on that: one, the word quality almost never comes up. You know, because it's, again, I think it's just table stakes at this point. You know, people aren't thinking of you as a quality brewery. They're thinking of you as tasty or this or that. But we were working with a brewery and, you know, we had that question. We collected the data, and the owner of the brewery just stereotypical hippie dude, right? We come in and you know, we're sitting there talking with them, and we're like, yeah, you know, and we make one of those cloud charts, you know, where it's like the more mentioned a word gets, the bigger it gets and the smaller. If you've seen those before, I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
His brewery had frat boy and some other words which were similar to that, but I'm not going to say because I don't want to have my voice recorded with that kind of language. But they had some very choice terms. And the guy was mortified. And he's like, no, my brand doesn't stand for that. It stands for this, this, and this. And it's like, well, yeah, maybe, but not to the general public. They think you're more of a, you know, party and this and that and the other. And it was a real interesting conversation from that point forward. But you have to find out. You have to find out because it's again, a broken record on this one, but it's not, your brand is not what you say it is. It's what consumers think it is. And if you don't have one, they're going to make one up for you. They're going to create a difference in their mind because they have to do something. You know, people find shortcuts, right? It's like, oh, well, they're the ones who are really good at IPAs. Maybe, you know, you have one IPA, but that's not what you're known for. And so then when you come out with your lager, people ignore you. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's super interesting. I mean, and yeah, I mean, I think you'll be surprised maybe what, you know, consumers think of your brand or of your brewery. Yeah, and that's a really interesting story. I mean, yeah. Again, all right, it's just kind of getting out of your bubble, just trying to, like, you might think you know what your brand is, but you need to actually find out what people think about it. Yeah, and so talk about a little bit about so we talked on our previous call a little bit about brand awareness just in general for your particular brewery. I mean, also we talked a little bit about, like, if your brewery is named after, like, a physical location, then it tends to get more brand awareness just because of recognition of that name. Can you maybe talk a little bit just about the brand awareness in general? Cause I'm sure that's something that I would imagine out of this data, that if you're a brewery, you obviously want to have more brand awareness. Can you maybe just talk a little bit about, how that factors, or maybe like what you know, and the idea of the location, the name based on a physical location too.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, awareness is, you know, I mean, that's the first step in the purchase funnel, right? If they're not aware of you, they're never going to consider you. They're never going to buy you. So you have to have that awareness. And depending on your market, that's obviously getting tougher and tougher to have, because it's just so darn crowded out there. And, you know, based on what Bart was saying at the summit a couple of weeks ago, it's only going to get more crowded here in the near future. All that said, I'm totally going sidetracking here, but I think there's still plenty of room for growth. I think it's actually a really exciting time, time full of uncertainty, but exciting time. Brand awareness. If they're not aware, they can't ever take you into consideration. If they don't consider you, they can't ever purchase you. So, you know, establishing that awareness in a crowded marketplace is going to become more and more important. One of the things that our research has shown is that places that are named after locations, so, Austin Beer Works, for example, has this incredible brand recognition in Texas. They only distribute within 20 miles of their brewery. And, you know, Austin, great city, but it's, you know, very small compared to Dallas and Houston. So when you look at the state population, there's no reason Austin Beer Works should have that great of a brand awareness, but they do. And we see this in other states too. When you're named after something, you know, city, a natural, you know, park, Sierra Nevada, for example.
Yeah, go back, yeah, to exactly.
You automatically see those scores kind of inflate a little bit. And, yeah, I think some of that's just people saying, oh, I've heard of that place. You know, not necessarily, they don't really necessarily know that brewery. So we get, there's a little bit of noise in that data. But we do see it pretty consistently across every state that we have done research in.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, like, if you're trying to grow your brand, then, say if a brewery, you know, came to you and they found out they had, you know, maybe like 12% brand awareness in their state or in their area, in their market. I mean, obviously that's something they'd want to grow. Is that something that like they might come back to you in a year after they've tried to develop that brand awareness? Is that something that you then would be able to retest and come up with new data and be like, yeah, you know, you actually grew by X number percent or anything like that? Is that something you guys try to offer? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it's funny when, you know, one of the analogies I use sometimes when I'm talking to brewers is, you know, you would never make a batch of beer and not measure the original gravity, right? You know, mm-hmm. So you measure at the start, you measure at the end. That's how you know what you've got. And yet when it comes to marketing, we just kind of throw stuff out there and hope it all works out. So yeah, by doing kind of the pre and the post, so to speak. So yeah, getting that first measure, getting that baseline. Okay, we're at 12% awareness. Now, you know, what are we going to do? And I'm not a creative. I'm not going to try and design a new campaign for you or anything like that. But from a measurement standpoint, yeah, how will you know it worked? Well, you know, a great way is to go back to consumers and see how did that awareness shift? You know, did that move the needle or not? And who did it move the needle with? You know, did we appeal to a new target group or did we get more of the same kind of folks?
You're right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's, yeah, you got to measure, got to be able to gauge and measure those results. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously this is not in your wheelhouse when it comes to the marketing branding side of things. But I think another resonating thing that I saw at the Craft Summit was, and just in general in my work and my experience is just, the importance of events, having unique events that draw customers in, that make them more aware of your brand, that it can experience your brand. And, you know, you're seeing events that are being held in more unique locations that are partnered with, you know, different organizations. They might partner with, you know, nonprofits that are delivering good causes to the local communities. Or, you know, I recently went to one here in Portland that was a Salmon Safe IPA festival that was hosted by Hopworks. And what they did was they partnered with local or like farms that are in the area that grow the malts or that grow the hops, and they have certified for salmon safe farming production methods and all that. And then they work with breweries that use those ingredients and that also care about that environmental aspect. And so they put together this festival with all these breweries that are using these salmon safe ingredients. And it's just something like stuff like that, you know, starts connecting with, you know, if you're an environmental person or whatever, just like it, connecting with different organizations or partnering with different people that align with, you know, similar values, kind of like reaching that audience as well. You know, if you partner with an organization, maybe their audience likes craft beer, but maybe they don't know about your brand. And so they may think I can bring them in. And I think that's just definitely a very huge thing to be able to do to kind of help build your brand awareness. And that was a little tangent from my right. branding side of things.
No, and, you know, first I got to say, when you were describing that, I was really afraid you were going to say they put salmon in the IPAs.
Yeah. Well, I think they were serving salmon at the festival. So I think people were like, wait a minute.
Irony.
This isn't salmon. Yeah.
I was relieved to hear that. But yeah, I think, and it's interesting, because I hear a lot of talk, you know, people are kind of burnt out on the festivals. There's just so many of them now. Just every other weekend, hey, come here and spend $30 and you get a little cup and, you know, fine. I love festivals, but, I think that trend is going to become more of, yeah, okay, let's get specific. So, you know, specific to a style, see, you know, a lot of those, but yeah, specific to a cause. I think that's a really interesting, approach they had there and be worth keeping an eye on, because I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's so much, you know, so many just kind of big catch-all festivals, which are great if you want to go find a whole bunch of new breweries and whatnot. But you can make it a little more specific, a little more specialized. I think that's going to attract people. And yeah, it's going to help establish that brand identity that we were just talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, cool, man. I really appreciate you taking some time to hang out and do an interview. And I think a lot of this stuff I think is very important. And I think it's also interesting You know, as we kind of mentioned, I think it's important for baristas to have an idea of what their consumers are doing and what their preferences are and what they think of your brand. So, I mean, I think, you know, what you're able to offer, I think is very helpful, and I think can help, you know, grow brands and really reach more consumers in a better way as well. So if you were, people were to try to find you, where should people go to learn more about Data Quencher?
I'm glad you asked. DataQuencher.com is the website, or we're at Data Quencher on Twitter. Those are really the two easiest ways to get a hold of us. And we're very prompt with our responses. So, yeah, we love to sit around and talk beer, and we've got a lot of data, hence the name Data Quencher. And, you know, we're, like I said earlier, this is an uncertain time for the industry, but it's an exciting time, and we're excited to be a part of it.
Awesome. And then, so you work with breweries of all sizes, or is there any certain, like, area that you're the most effective in, or are you just kind of just open to working with all size breweries?
We're open to working with everyone. We do seem to kind of have a sweet spot of you know, breweries that are a little more established, just because they're, you know, they've built a brand at some level, so that gives us something to measure, as opposed to a new brewery where, you know, maybe, you know, if you've only been open 6 months, you know, your awareness just isn't going to be very measurable, because you're just too new, depending on the scene of where you're in. So we do tend to go a little more that way, but you know, we're happy to talk to anybody and help in any way we can.
Yeah, I'm sure it's probably something that, you know, like you mentioned, if they'd be open for a while to have that brand awareness, but it's, I think it's something they're probably going to hurt, you know, just to kind of get some ideas of what they maybe should start keeping track of or keeping an idea about. And yeah, I mean, and then once they get to that point, then they can kind of get a more in-depth data and kind of insights. So I think that'd be great. Well, cool, man. Rob, yeah, again, really appreciate you taking some time to join us. And I had a really great conversation. And I hope to be in touch with you again soon, bud.
All right, man. Well, man, it's good talking with you. Take care.